I'm Bill Littlefield. Four teams remain in the MLB postseason. The LA Dodgers, the Chicago Cubs, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Cleveland Indians will begin this week's three stories you should know by focusing on the last of those four. My guests are Nancy Armour of USA Today and Mike Pesca, host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Nancy, what's on your mind?
Well, as you mentioned, we are into the final round of the playoffs before the World Series. The ALCS and the NLCS both start this weekend. And one of the teams in the ALCS are the Cleveland Indians, who, despite making a little bit of a change in their logo at the beginning of the season, they now are using a big block C as their primary logo, are still using Chief Wahoo, which, if you have seen him, is a red-faced, toothy grin Indian with a feather in the back of his head. It's 2016, people. Let's ditch the racist names, the racist mascots. I just don't understand why it's so hard for people to understand that it's not cool to be making fun of or demeaning or denigrating an entire class of people for a sports team.
I think that Chief Wahoo has one thing that is shielding him, and that is the presence of the Washington Redskins as a name, which is not just a logo and is not just a neutral expression. It is a slur. So as long as the Redskins continue to have a name, down the pecking order are the Indians and Chief Wahoo. But in general, naming your team after a collection of people is something that no one's doing anymore. It's something that most colleges are getting away from. To the extent, I just attended the presidential debate at Hofstra, and you know, they're known as the Hofstra Pride now, and they used to be known as the Hofstra Flying Dutchman, named after the mythical ship, not the people. But since so many people thought they were named after the people, I'm sure eventually that the Redskins and Indians are going to change. But right now, it doesn't seem likely.
I agree with you, Mike, that there is a kind of a hierarchy here, and some names are certainly more offensive than others. Here on Only a Game, I have been calling the NFL team the franchise that plays in Washington, D.C. for some years. But yes. I'm told by my producers that nobody has noticed. So I don't know whether my protest has been effective or not. But I agree with you. I hope that this is a trend, and I hope we can get away from offending people with this kind of stuff.
Cleveland's baseball team is a wonderful story. It is, you know, one of those small market teams that has had a great front office, a great farm team. The fact that they're in the playoffs is, and we're pretty much dominant all season, it's a great story. And it shouldn't be tainted by the fact that they're using a mascot that really has no place in sports and hasn't for the last couple of decades.
Mike, I gather that you've been doing some reading lately.
I have. I will cop to that. So my story to follow actually goes back quite a ways because I've been reading the autobiography of Steve Young called QB, My Life Behind the Spiral. Mm-hmm. And he recounts, you know, he's the first lefty quarterback in the Hall of Fame. And so you maybe think of that as a quirky little thing, but actually it was quite an impediment. And when he was at BYU, he was eighth on the depth chart. And they even told him, you should go out for defense because the offensive coordinator flat out will not coach a left-handed quarterback. Now, that coordinator took a job elsewhere before the season started, and then Young was given the chance. I've also been listening. There's a new podcast from the guys at 538 called Ahead of Their Time, and it's about things like the two-handed backhand in tennis and the shift. And sometimes someone will try something new, and now it's the state of the art. But back then, when they tried the shift, it was seen as crazy. And I have a little sympathy for sports, because in sports, there is, in fact, a right way of doing so many physical motions. I mean, there are different batting stances you could take, but you still have to put your back elbow up, and you still have to not bail your head out. It is maybe hard for people in the world of sports to think a little creatively and get out of their ruts and get out of their routines.
Nancy, what do you think? Are we in an age of accepting alternatives to ruts?
Well, I think you have to be. You know, everybody's always trying to find a better way to invent the mousetrap. And to rule somebody out simply because they're left-handed or because they have an odd throwing motion or because, you know, they shoot free throws from their waist as opposed to from, you know, above their head. If it works for that person and if it works for your system or your team, then why not go for it? And also, too, you know, if you do have somebody who's unusual or does something a little bit different, that could be an advantage to you because other teams and other coaches, coordinators, whatever, they haven't seen it before. So they might not know how to deal with it, but you do.
I wonder if this is representative of trends in the culture in general, where we could look back 20 or 30 years and say, wow, people thought that was unusual and now it's completely acceptable and you pick your particular acceptable thing these days. I'm not going to wade into those waters very deeply. But I also wonder what things we are doing now, which 20 and 30 years on, somebody's going to look at and say, how could they have thought that was the only way to do that? I'm not sure. There must be things, though, right? Because that's the way time operates.
Well, I've got a nominee, and we're seeing it with the baseball playoffs, the use of a closer as a closer at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And Buck Showalter was only going to go with Zach Britton when his team had a lead, and they never even got to Zach Britton. But then we saw the Dodgers deploy a series of closers, and Clayton Kershaw came in for the final two outs. So I predict in 20 years, the idea of a closer will go away, and we're just going to think of pitchers as, let's just get the best two innings out of this guy whenever those most important two innings, for instance, come up.
That would be great. I think that would be a terrific development in baseball. It would add to the excitement, and unhappily, it would probably also slow the game down because there would be more pitching changes. That's the only drawback I can think about.
You'd have to institute that rule alongside that you can't get out of the batter's box to adjust your gloves if you haven't swung the bat. So if they have both those rules at once, we could maybe not take up too much time.
All right, it's my turn. Auston Matthews, he scored four times in his debut with the Toronto Maple Leafs on Wednesday night. Neither Bobby Orr nor Wayne Gretzky did that, and I started thinking about other star-studded first appearances by pro athletes. Some of them are obvious. Wilt Chamberlain scored 43 points and had 28 rebounds in his first game as a pro with the Warriors. Pretty good week for a lot of veteran players. In his first game with the San Francisco Giants, Willie McCovey went 4-for-4 and hit two triples, had two runs batted in. And it wasn't like he was hitting against second-line pitching. The guy on the mound was Robin Roberts, who eventually made it to the Hall of Fame. These are great kinds of stories to think about. And I'm not sure that either of them is quite as impressive as Auston Matthews scoring four goals. But it does lead me to wonder whether either or both of you have sort of first-time performances that have stuck with you.
We've talked a little bit about baseball today, and I'll stay on that same theme. Wilson Contreras, who is the Chicago Cubs catcher, highly touted prospect. He was supposed to start his first game end of June, and they used him as a pinch hitter the day before. First pitch that he sees in the major leagues, he homers.
Where do you go from there?
Exactly. You can only go down from there.
Mike, what do you think? You got anything on this list?
This is why the Olympics are so great, because for so many of us, sure, the swimmers who knew who Katie Ledecky was beforehand, they're like, oh, yeah, she's good. But for everyone else, these kids sometimes come out of nowhere, win gold medals, and establish themselves as the best in the world.
Mm. There also is, of course, the counter to this, and that is Willie Mays coming up with the Giants back in 1951 and going 0-for-24. Something like that. And then going to Leo Durocher and saying, listen, I don't think I can make it here. You better send me back to Minneapolis where I can play some AAA. I can hit those guys. And Durocher saying, no, look, Willie, you're my center fielder. I don't care if you go 0-for-100. And of course, the next day he got a couple of hits and only became the greatest player of all time. But it doesn't work out that way for everybody, obviously.
Well, do you think at this point that he would be allowed to continue? You know, would a manager have done that, or would a manager have written him off at that point in this day and age?
Great question. Great question.
We might get that answered by the example of Alex Bregman of the Astros, who started off not so much better than Willie Mays, but he could be one of the great players next year. Who knows?
My guests for this week's Three Stories You Should Know have been Nancy Armour of USA Today and Mike Pesca, host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist. Thank you, Mike, very much.
You're welcome.
And Nancy, great to hear from you as always.
Always fun.